Hello, and welcome to What Comes to Mind, Season 2 of The Psychonaut Show. This is John K. Burton, MD, psychiatrist, psychoanalyst, and your host on this podcast that brings ideas from the history of psychoanalysis to solve problems in everyday life. Yes, we are back. It's Season 2 of The Psychonaut Show, and this is the first episode just in time for spring. If you happen to be following American Gods, the TV show based on Neil Gaiman's hugely popular novel by the same name, you'll know that in the last episode of that show, we met the goddess Ostara, played by Kristen Chenoweth, the goddess of spring and birth.
Pray to Ostara.
So we are just in time for spring, Easter, Passover, the vernal equinox, and Ostara. And I think that it's appropriate that in this episode we're going to be investigating the third testament of the psychonaut, the testament of birthright. Now, the testament of birthright, along with the testament of reason, the third and fourth testaments are what I call the testaments of faith. Now, you remember that the first two testaments were called the testaments of action because they tell us how to work in our inner worlds, how to act. Whereas the testaments of faith are more about our basic worldview, sort of a philosophy, if you will, the cosmology of inner space. You probably remember this from episode 8 of season 1 when we went over all of the six testaments. And if you remember, the testament of birthright says this: our fundamental nature is to contribute value to the world we share with others. We are born with the desire to solve problems, not cause them. Our birthright is goodness. Let me quote Colson Whitehead in his book, The Underground Railroad. He said, "Men start off good, and then the world makes them mean." And if you've read The Underground Railroad, and if you haven't, I highly suggest you do, you will see that Colson Whitehead is brilliant at showing how mean the world actually can be. And to say that we start off good, nevertheless, is quite a powerful statement. And I'm sure that some of you are saying, what about Hitler or Rwanda or when the Chinese took over Tibet or the destruction of Native Americans in this country? And I don't want to say that I have the answer to all that, but I hope that you'll go with me further in this. And again, our birthright is connection and authenticity. And if we or someone else is falling short, it is because something has gotten in the way. And when that is removed, we have the possibility of returning to growth. So I want to give you an example in real life where the testament of birthright actually helped solve a problem. So this is about a couple who were arguing about Donald Trump, because that never happens in our country today. Anyway, they were arguing in particular about the Republicans' new tax plan. Now, it happens that the two of them are more or less aligned in their politics. The husband describes himself as socially liberal but financially conservative, whereas the wife is probably more liberal in general, but both come from the same socioeconomic level. And the husband works as the head of his accounting department at his company, and the wife isn't working at the moment because they decided together that they're starting a family and it would be better if she were focusing on that. Anyway, she was talking about the tax plan and said that this was really all to benefit the wealthy by giving tax breaks to corporations, that middle class and working class people were going to lose out and all of this money would flow into corporations. And the husband said, it's my job to look at this stuff as I have to be responsible for the bottom line. That wasn't true. And she got angry at him and said that he was siding with people who were greedy and immoral. And he replied, why are you saying this? I've read the law carefully. That's part of my job. And in fact, the thing is our corporation is actually going to have to pay more taxes in this case. But in this case, it made it even worse because his wife felt he was using his job title to disrespect her opinion, and she told him that. Now, he responded saying, "No, no, I do respect you." He brought up how well she dealt with some of the difficulties that they had experienced at home, much better than he did. An example of a tension at school with one of their kids. But the wife took that even more patronizing because he was emphasizing home stuff as opposed to being able to talk about politics. She felt like it was a slight to her intelligence. And she said that he was being sexist, just like Donald Trump. She was very angry. And then the husband got angry too, because he felt like he was being attacked for irrational reasons when he was just trying to explain things. And they were really at an impasse. Now, before I tell you how this couple used the Testament of Birthright to help them resolve this standoff that they had come to, I want to tell you more about the ideas behind Testament number 3. And I have to tell you, this has probably been the most difficult episode for me to put together, because this idea of goodness, of basic goodness, is not part of psychoanalytic theory. I understand that Jung had a concept of individuation, which said that psychoanalysis wants to help human beings evolve, individuate, meaning reach their potential throughout their lives, a higher level, if you will, which seems like it is similar to this idea. But I have to tell you, in training at my institute, which was a part of the American Psychoanalytic Association, the words Carl Jung were never spoken. And on the other hand, there's also so much evidence in the world to suggest that the idea of the birthright of goodness is just wrong. There's people and situations that we look at that seem like they just must be inherently evil. There's no other explanation. And yet, we do need this testament to do the work on our inner worlds and explore them. And I think that going back to my first episode, where I said that the word psyche means both mind and soul, this is where we're going to have to emphasize the soul part and turn to some of the wisdom traditions for guidance. Now, in Buddhism, there is the idea of Buddha nature, and that says that all of us have the capacity to exhibit limitless wisdom and compassion. Joseph Campbell, because he compared all of the different worlds, religions, and concepts, and ideas, and myths, and stories, and everything, says that this also exists in Christianity in certain forms. Christ nature is really the same from this point of view as Buddha nature. The Quakers often talk about the light rather than Jesus himself, and say that the light exists within all of us. We are surrounded by it. And we need to work on being able to connect to it. And the Quakers really believed that we could become like Christ. And in that way, they're completely different from other forms of Christianity. In fact, the founder of the Quakers, George Fox, back in the 1600s, called on friends, with a capital F, that is, to walk with friendship upon the earth, seeking that of God in everyone. And by this, God can be understood as that goodness, as that light that exists potentially in all of us. Not potentially it exists, but sometimes it's covered over. Now, that idea has been completely overshadowed in mainstream Christianity by the fixation on original sin. Though that idea was an add-on from the original teachings of Jesus. Like, for example, St. Augustine's theology of total depravity, and Calvin and others in the Middle Ages picked up on that and said that, it says that even infants are predestined for hell. And of course, if anyone's seen an infant, that's a kind of a problematic idea. So this idea of total depravity, original sin, which says we're not basically good, has a lot of problems, I think. But back to Buddhism, it also has a concept called basic goodness, which Chogyam Trungpa, who is a Tibetan Buddhist and actually founded a college here in America, Naropa College in Boulder, Colorado, translated for secular audiences, for everyone, not necessarily Buddhists, and said that basic goodness is like Buddha nature, but it's more accessible. It's less sort of transcendent, more everyday. We get it through our senses. And a friend of mine explained it to me like this. She said, it's like when you go outside and you breathe in a sharp sense of cold and it completely wakes you up and it stops the chatter in your head. Then you've been in touch with that basic goodness in you, and you can recognize it in other people too. It means our kindness and wisdom and strength are always present, even though neurosis, anger, fear can also be ongoing and powerful too. They're like clouds blocking the sun. The sun is there even if we can't see it. Now, in my bonus episode, the interview with Dr. Clarice Kestenbaum, you may remember that she said that she did not believe in the death instinct for 1 minute, and that she believed in the life instinct. Well, the death instinct was an idea that Freud had at the end of his life, and this was a time when Freud was suffering terribly from mouth cancer. The Nazis had taken over Vienna, and he was very much in danger and very much in a depressed state, wondering what had become of the world, as many people were at that time, certainly in Europe. And he came up with this idea of the death instinct, and some schools of psychoanalysis have continued to theorize that this is part of us, this is innate, in particularly Melanie Klein. And Klein really picked up on Freud's late theory about the death instinct. And you could sort of think of her as the Saint Augustine of psychoanalysis, maybe. She proposed that we are all born with destructive drives, like that they're part of our instincts. And one of them is overwhelming envy, and that the infant wants to bite and devour and destroy the mother and the mother's breasts inherently, even though there's also the libido and he loves it, but this aggressive, destructive part is very much there. Now, Winnicott, who you remember from the episode on transitional space, who was taught by Melanie Klein, but was very important to that British middle school that tried to resolve so many conflicts, in his characteristically whimsical way, he responded to this idea and said that, you know, the child who is faced with a piece of chocolate cake devours the chocolate cake. He destroys it as a result of his love, but he doesn't destroy the chocolate cake because he hates the chocolate cake or he envies the chocolate cake. The destruction of the chocolate cake is just an unfortunate side effect of his love. And so you can see that the birthright of goodness is something that can be very philosophical and theoretical, but it also is very relevant to things that we experience daily, like a cold breath of air or a chocolate cake. So how did the testament of birthright help this couple resolve their standoff? Well, this couple at their wedding, which happened to be a Jewish ceremony, but they did bring in this idea of basic goodness from the teachings of Trungpa and made a promise, part of their wedding vows, to always remember each's basic goodness and to look for it when conflicts occur. The husband first had to remember that his wife was not someone who at her core despised him, as he had been treated cruelly by other women in the past. And when he was able to remember her basic goodness consciously, he stopped trying to appease her and realized that he could understand her feeling, and he told her so. And in her turn, she realized she was putting him in a class of people that he didn't belong in, and she knew that he didn't belong in it. That's why she married him. And when they began to trust again that each other had a good heart, it allowed them to get back to a conversation, resolve their conflict, and they were both able to grow in their understanding of society, politics, how things work, that they're more complex. And most importantly, it helped them to grow in their relationship. So the testament of birthright is sort of like in the show, Are You Being Served? Which the fact that I'm referring to that show reminds me of John McWhorter's podcast, Lexicon Valley, which is a show about language and the ideas from linguistics applied to everyday life, but he's always making these pop culture references that sometimes I feel like only a certain demographic, myself included, is going to know about. And Are You Being Served is one of those shows. It's a British sitcom from the 70s, and it's very silly, but there's this one scene that keeps repeating, as they do in sitcoms, where the owner of the store, as they call him, young Mr. Grace, who's about 98 years old, comes down in a wheelchair and waves to the staff and says, "You're all doing very well." And "you're all doing very well" is kind of the spirit of the testament of Birthright. Another pop culture reference is a sci-fi TV show called Dark Matter that's actually current. And the premise of that show is that all of these people wake up from suspended animation on this spaceship, and they don't know how they got there, and they don't know who each other is, but they get confronted with obstacles where they really try to work together and solve the problem and do their best, but at a certain point, they find out who they were, and they're all prisoners, convicts, thieves, murderers who got put on this spaceship together. And again, that kind of shows, fictionally, of course, that their basic essence is to be good once you take away all of the stuff that got in the way. It's really the opposite of the bad seed idea. And there is this terrible movie from the 50s, terrible in a fantastically campy way, called The Bad Seed. And it even has a psychiatrist explaining, you know, that the genetics of sociopathy in this little girl.
Oh, yes, children often commit murders.
That's kind of a standout example. And again, it goes against the testament of Birthright. And these testaments are things that we take as givens. But if you look at pop culture, even, you know, comic books or superheroes, even the supervillains have backstories that tell us why they became the way they are. And I guess this goes to show that the testament of Birthright is not an excuse. It's not saying, oh, it's okay to have bad behavior. Not at all. But it's a way to say, you know, if somebody is doing bad things, if they're hurting other people, then how did this happen? There's a story behind that. And speaking of how did people become the way they are, we can look at our political situation now, or I look at our political situation now, and yes, it's a challenge to invoke the testament of Birthright. And when we look at certain people, say, who are doing really problematic things, we say, you know, they're motivated by greed or selfishness or power or whatever, these, you know, bad things, not caring about other people, not caring about the world, not wanting to do good, not wanting to be good, and wonder where the testament of Birthright could possibly have a role. You, of course, remember that iconic episode in the presidential debates back in 2016, where the man asked Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton if they could think
name
of one
positive thing that you respect in one another.
And this is really, again, the spirit of Birthright, Birthright of goodness. And what Hillary said was that she didn't agree with anything that he said, but that she admired his children. And I have to say, like, I'm not sure that I actually admire his children at all, but I still believe that they were born good. I believe that Donald Trump was born good, and that there is something that led them to be behaving in the ways that they're behaving. And I would love to think about or even have them in the room to understand them. You know, Hillary was also criticized for calling Trump supporters a basket of deplorables,
right?
And she got in a lot of trouble for that. And some people said, well, you know, they are. But again, the birthright of goodness, the testament of birthright says we need to look a little further than that. And particularly if you're talking about citizens of the country, citizens of the world who have opinions that are different from yours. And if you want to be their leader, but even if you want to kind of live in the same country, it's helpful to say, where are they coming from? They must be starting from a good place. They've just gotten somewhere that I haven't gotten to. One of the most beautiful observations, maybe paradoxically, comes from Dave Chappelle, who's criticized here and there for speaking his mind and saying politically incorrect things. But I have to tell you, in the spirit of his comedy and what he says, the birthright of goodness is really there. And in his recent stand-up show, Equanimity, he was talking about seeing Trump supporters showing up at the polling place. And, you know, he makes fun of them and everything.
You know,
but
what I didn't see?
He says,
I didn't see one deplorable face in that group.
And I have to say, for all of his, you know, digs and political incorrectness and stuff that people find offensive, he has that spirit of, you know, people are basically trying to do their best there. So what is the lesson here? The testament of birthright is a testament because in my work and thinking, and I've thought a lot about this stuff, I have decided it has to be there. It's one of the foundation stones that fits in with the other testaments. Like this, we can't be neutral, the first testament, if we believe that, as the tabloids tell us, some people are not human beings like us, but are monsters or perverts or sickos, as you often see in these headlines. And if we don't believe our nature is good, as opposed to the doctrine of total depravity or the death instinct, you know, there's really no point in being curious, because that's where it all ends up. The testament of birthright works. It's fundamental, along with the other testaments, to living effectively and solving problems. So I want to give you another example of someone experiencing basic goodness in real life. So this was a man who was in his early 30s, but he'd had a difficult past. His adolescence was very troubled, a lot of oppositional behavior. His parents had tried sending him to a boarding school, but he was kicked out more than once. And when he came to treatment, we recognized that he had symptoms of social anxiety and major depression and alcohol addiction, all of which needed to be dealt with and treated through a variety of modalities. And it took a really long time. But although the symptoms of these illnesses could be treated and dealt with, it was managing the shame that he experienced, which was not a symptom of any illness, but was his feeling about not having achieved anything in his life. And dealing with that feeling of shame and overcoming it was a very long process and sometimes a hopeless one. But the thing that he had done in school was play soccer, and he was very good at it. And he loved it, and he loved the team aspect of it, and at one point thought of doing it professionally, though that was not in the cards anymore. And so when he began to feel a little bit better, and it was not until many years later, he got back onto the field, just playing casually with some adults after work. And he remembered something from early on that he had felt in his life, which he had forgotten about. He described it as a feeling of being light, easy, friendly, and helpful. So not just a good feeling in himself, but also a connection with others and the sense that they could see him as good and he could be good with them. And it was the only place that he didn't feel that anger and fear and paranoia that he pretty much felt in all other areas of his life. And it was when he experienced that early good feeling that he was able to really get back on track. And so the thing here is that it doesn't matter how many bad or hopeless things you have. Of course, it matters because it makes it more difficult. But what really matters is getting back to the place and experience, whatever it is for you, where you are in touch with your birthright. And I want to end with the quote that's often attributed to Martin Luther King, but he got it from Theodore Parker, an American transcendentalist who lived 80 years before Martin Luther King. And he said, "The moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice." This is Dr. JKB signing off. Since we are exploring together, you make the journey all the richer by subscribing to the show on iTunes. And even better, if you also leave a rating, it helps others to find us. If you have a story about how the concept in this episode helped you figure out something in your life, send it in, please. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter at Psychonaut Show. Show notes are on the website, thepsychonautshow.com. And if you leave me a question, it may well be an inspiration for an upcoming episode. Until our next trip, judge nothing, question everything, and remember, there's always a reason. Bye for now. All the patient stories presented on the Psychonauts Show are created by me to illustrate an idea. Any resemblance to actual people is purely coincidental. The Psychonauts Show was created and produced by yours truly, John Burton. Art and web design by Hunter Creative. Post-production and sound design by Julio Gonzalez of Zimmer Media. Zimmer Media can be found online at zimmer.co. That's X-I-M-E-R.co.